We feel the presence of the body, hear the sound of my voice, the sound of the world outside the temple. My heart attunes itself to this present experience, and all of it is known here within this space of awareness. Hearing, feeling, thinking, physical sensation, taste, smell. These are all different kinds of consciousness. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, consciousness. Patterns of experience arising, taking shape, dissolving, constantly. But they're known within this space of awareness. Listening to the inner sound, the nada, is a way of recollecting this spacious quality of experiencing. If we develop that, the listening to the inner sound becomes like a backdrop, a presence which reminds us of that intrinsically spacious, open quality of the heart. Like the air fills this temple, the space of this hall, so too the inner sound, the nada, fills the space of awareness. Here it is, ever present, non-personal, unremarkable, energizing, beginningless, endless, just like the force of gravity. We feel it here. It's felt. It's known. It's heard, attended to. But it's completely non-personal. Just like we wouldn't say, my gravity. We don't think of it as my sound. My inner listening, but rather it's a non-personal, ever-present quality, helping to keep the attention alert, energized, receptive. So as the days of our group practice go by and the winter retreat proceeds, and slowly, steadily, the system settles down. Less things that we're personally involved in, less personal issues to discuss or attend to, those fall into the background so that the heart can attend to the flow of experience in a much more non-personal way. Things haven't got a particular name on them. It's just feeling, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, remembering, imagining. That's all. But the habit of the mind is to personalize. Even though this awareness, this knowing, isn't a person and doesn't belong to a person, this which knows the person isn't personal. It's not an I or a me. It has no age, no gender, no nationality, no language. But yet the habit of the mind is to personalize the deeply ingrained tendency of the mind, like a deep rut, thinking in terms of, I remember, I have a problem, I am interested, I'm excited, I'm annoyed, I'm worried. And so much of the development of insight revolves around getting to know this personalizing habit, the way the mind continually, steadily recreates the I, me and mine feelings, ahankara, made of I am, mamankara, made of mineness, my body, my feelings, my potential, my problems, my family, my monastery. My spiritual achievements, my defilements, whatever it might be, wholesome, unwholesome, neutral, that personalizing, self-creating habit is extraordinarily strong, pervasive in most beings. This is why enlightenment is rare. These are powerful, ancient, deeply entrenched tendencies of mind, habits of mind. If they're not challenged, if these habits, these underlying tendencies are not noticed, if they're not challenged, if they're not explored, then they just carry on regardless. Their influence on the mind, on the field of experience is continually recreated. Like the people running some kind of illegal scam, they'll keep running the scam until they get caught. If they're not being observed, if they're not being watched, they'll keep getting away with it. This is how avijja works. Ignorance works. Unless the eye-making and mind-making habits are noticed, they're revealed, they're explored, challenged, they just keep recreating themselves, profiting from those feelings of I and me and mine. Bhava tanha, the thrill of becoming, the charge, the gratification that arises from bhava, becoming, me becoming something. Now, insight meditation is designed to illuminate those habits, shine a light on them, reveal the scam that's going on, letting it be known, letting it be challenged, going against it. One of the ways that this can be brought about is by deliberately asking questions. When the mind is quite still, quiet, spacious, no thought going on, just listening to the sound of silence, the mind awake, open, aware. Then into that space of the mind, we can consciously, deliberately introduce a question designed to reveal those eye-making and mind-making habits. A question like, who is meditating? Does this mind have an owner? If it has an owner, what does that owner look like? What's the me that is the owner of this body, this life? The I that is asking a question. What is this? There are many well-established practices around this kind of method. Known as a reflective inquiry, or in the Chinese tradition called the Hua Tou, the head and the tail, or the investigating the Gong An or Koan in Japanese. And the point of these kind of questions is not to come to some sort of clever philosophical answer, but rather to illuminate the ignorant habits of the mind. So when the question, who am I, is brought into consciousness, dropping that question into the space of the mind, who am I? We're not looking for a conceptual answer, but rather the hesitation, the pause, the silence of the mind before those clever intellectual answers start popping up. When that question is asked, who am I? There's a moment of pausing, a hesitation, a gap before the thinking begins. And in that gap, there's the intuition awakened that who is the wrong question. Who doesn't really apply, doesn't have a meaning. So in that moment of pause, of hesitation, what's called the tail, the head is the question, the tail is the gap afterwards. In that tail, that space, there's the intuition. Who is the wrong question? And when the word I is used, what really is that referring to? This is a conscious use of deliberate thought. And the purpose of bringing up these kind of questions is not to cause the mind to get lost in more chattering thought, strings of proliferation, papancha, but rather it's a tool, a way to clarify, illuminate the habits of thinking, the habits of attitude. The Buddha used the image of, it's like using a thorn to dig out another thorn that you've trodden on. You stepped on a thorn, it's stuck in your foot, so you pick up another thorn to dig it out with. So you use a thought to dig out the attachment to other thoughts, using a thorn to extract another thorn. And when we use this kind of practice, we can take a classical question like, who am I? But also, it's helpful to let that modulate, let that change. So if you bring up the question, who am I? And then in a short period of time, the question who doesn't seem to apply, let it change to what? What am I? And if the I is appearing as a weird and strange creation, something that doesn't apply either, let the question change again to what is it? What is this? So the point is not the words of the question that we use, but the space, the pause that follows the posing of the question. Because in that moment, the chattering mind has gone quiet. There's alertness, clarity, simplicity, no sense of self. The I-making and mind-making have been interrupted, unplugged. It's like the camera is turned back onto the photographer. Unexpectedly, we see ourselves in a mirror. Oh, look. If we use this kind of practice, the point is not the verbal answers that might arise, but the silence of the mind. The silence of the awake, listening heart. That's the answer to all questions. When we pose a question like, who am I, or what is this? And there's a noticing and appreciation of that pause, that gap, that hesitation after the question. Let the heart attune to that, rest in that, embody that quality. Spacious, peaceful, non-personal. Not being anything, not being anything. Nothing held onto, nothing pushed away. It's a spacious, wakeful, knowing quality. The world of the external senses, the world of inner thoughts and emotions, memories, ideas, they arise, take shape, dissolve within this infinite inner space. They're known here, they arise here, they disappear here. Let the heart embody that open, listening, non-personal presence. This is the Tathagata principle. Come to suchness, gone to suchness. Exactly thus.